One of my former professors, Jack Hineson, a number of decades ago, created this particular sermon today. I have altered it a little bit. He was Presbyterian, I'm Baptist. There are a couple of things that I've changed a little, but for the most part, something that I normally don't do, well, I don't do. But today I am. This is someone else's sermon, but it speaks to me. Dr. Hineson died in 2004. And a few months ago, I was thinking about sermon topics, and that his clown sermon kept coming to mind. I put it in a rotation two or three different times and have moved it for various reasons. And in fact, I had it scheduled for April, and then in late March, when I was looking at the end of April and May, I changed it to May the 19th. While seeking to do him justice, as I said, I have altered it just slightly. Dr. Hineson was raised in a circus until he was 21. Although sometimes my family might have seemed like we were circus, I was not actually raised in a circus. Dr. Hineson was, his parents were vaudevillians, and he was born in California, not because that's where they lived, but they were traveling through there and later became, his father made him a clown in the circus at age five, until he became a flyer. And then he went later to college and seminary. Whenever I hear this sermon, and I have it on DVD, whenever I hear this sermon, it hits me pretty hard. If you find something worth hearing today, I hope that it helps our work together. And so I will begin. You ever wonder where preachers come from? We didn't come down from heaven with halos. And contrary to what some people think, we didn't come from the other direction either. My parents were vaudevillians when I was born, and we traveled later with the circus. I wanted to be a flyer on the trapeze, but I had to wait until I was tall enough. So my father dressed me up as a clown until I was 11 years old and finally tall enough to become a flyer for 10 years. It was really kind of funny because people used to say, "Oh, look, there's a midget." It was just a five-year-old. But I learned many things. And later I went to college, and then I went to seminary and became a minister. Later on, as I was a minister in New Jersey, a Head Start leader found out that I had been a clown and asked me if I would come and be a clown for some of the children in Head Start. And so I agreed. Now, you might ask lots of questions like I do. Especially, why? Why are things as they are? And it might surprise you, but I've asked a number of times, why clowns? Why do we need clowns? Everywhere there are jesters and clowns, even class clowns. But why do we need clowns? And so after thinking, I've come up with a few ideas. Now, sometimes I was asked to help dress children up as clowns in front of their classmates. And so I would do that. And what do you think the first thing they did when I got them dressed was? They ran over and punched somebody in the stomach. Why? Because that's what clowns do. Do they not? But why do we like to watch clowns? Because the clowns out there show us just what we might be in here but don't want to admit. And they do things that we might like to do, but we don't do. When I was growing up, Dad said, "To be a good clown, son, watch people. Do what they do. But exaggerate it. And people will laugh. Because the clown is a mirror." You know, a clown is really a fake. You don't see the real face, you only get to see the one painted on, the mask. He shows you a fake face that he wants you to see, not the real face that only he knows exists behind the mask. Jesus actually talked about clowns in the New Testament. He talked about them in many places in Matthew chapter 6 in the Sermon on the Mount. And in Matthew chapter 23, he talked about clowns. The word he used was hypocrite, which means a play actor or in some ways a mask wearer. In fact, Jesus, while sometimes he was hard on them, Jesus actually laughed at clowns. But we sneer at them, those hypocrites. Jesus said, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! How in the world will you escape Gehenna?" Now, that's the Greek word we translate hell, but it comes from Gehenna, which was a ravine outside of Jerusalem. It was a garbage dump. That's where all the junk went. And Jesus said, if you go around as a hypocrite, all you'll do is turn yourself into junk. Now, believe it or not, putting on masks is a common problem today. And I'm not just talking about the makeup that ladies put on. We all have needs, do we not? Especially needs to be loved and accepted, to be valued. And so we put on masks. We should be unique, the person that God created us to be. But instead we put on masks. You know, if I can figure out what those people want and like, I'll change. And they'll accept me. And when we do that over and over again, we simply become junk. Now, I want you to like me. Hadn't figured out any theological reason for cold cream. But it does help with some things. In particular. But I noticed something. You just might not like me. So many of you have noses that are different from mine. You have noses that maybe are a little bit bigger or perhaps a little more pointed than mine. And you might look at me and say, oh, there's that round-nosed, that little nose. And that'll upset me. So I'm putting on a different nose. I'll put on this different nose. And you will like me because of this nose. Right? You'll like me with this nose. Of course, right now, all I can see is the end of the nose. But later on, I'll look past it. My eyes will focus beyond. And you'll like me. Ah, but then after a while, you'll look at me and say, oh, look at that fake with that big pointy nose. He's such a fake. So you see, when we put on masks, we end up really only fooling ourselves. Do we not? And we are created with a need to be loved. Even to love ourselves. We're commanded to do so, aren't we? Jesus said, love your neighbor as you love yourself. The problem is that too many people really don't like themselves. Too many people really don't like themselves. In all the years of counseling, I have found that this problem often bubbles to the surface, that people don't really like themselves. And because of that, I don't like my wife. I don't like my husband. I don't like my church. I don't like my kids. This country is just going downhill. I just don't know what we're going to do. But you know, God gave us ourselves so that we might like ourselves. And if you don't, you know, you won't like anything else or anybody else. Because something is wrong with your liking machine that God gave you to like yourself. So if I don't like myself, then I'll change, right? Well, to really change, we probably have a better chance of holding our breath and walking all the way to the moon than to really be able to do that. But you know, I'm not the only one talking about that. Why? Jesus, all the prophets, John the Baptist, they all came around talking about that. Changing. Change. Repent. Change. And what do? Well, we ran them out of town. We threw them down wells. We beat them up. We cut off their heads. And we crucified one of them. Why? Because we don't like people telling us that we have to change and be different. But how can we really be joyful if we don't like ourselves and then we don't like other things? We're Americans, though we're practical and inventive. We don't change, we adjust. Go to a bookstore and look at all the new books that are out there this year to tell us how to adjust. And then next year there'll be a new crop because the ones that told us how to adjust this year didn't really work. For you see, we might want to change, but we really can't do it. Only God can create that kind of change. So we look outside of ourselves and we find something or someone we are better than, and that's how we deal with it. I know I'm all right because I live on this side of the tracks, not over there with the riffraff. I live on this side of the river, not on the other side. And now I'm wonderful because of my address, not because of my character. I've met some people who have told me their address almost as quickly as they've told me their name. Or they told me what job they do before I even know who they are. I know I am a wonderful person because I am a Baptist, or a Methodist, or a Catholic, a Presbyterian. On and on we could go. We take the thing that God gave us to bring us together, and we build barriers and divide ourselves. And that's dangerous when we begin putting those down. And I know now that I am wonderful, because I have this nose like yours, and I now have white around my eyes and my mouth. So I am wonderful. And you will accept me. And there we have the heart of the problem. You know, Alexander the Great said, I will make the world talk Greek, act Greek, live Greek. And he filled rivers with blood trying to do so. Adolf Hitler talked about creating a super race, and we all know what he did. You know, the root of that kind of madness is really not liking self. It is self-hatred. And we find someone to look down on so we can approve of ourselves and don't have to change. Now, I don't want to get stuff on my tie, so it's off. Not really doing a striptease. Did this in front of a group of 400 ladies. And there was this little old lady in the front row that kept giggling and hiding her face and giggling. And then afterwards, you know, everybody came by to shake hands. And, you know, ministers love that. And we can hardly wait to get the sermon over with so we can get to the back so everybody can tell us how great and wonderful we are. We just live for that. Not really. This little old lady kept getting further back in the line and getting further back in the line. And finally, when there were just a few people left and she was the last one, she came up and she said, because I said something about you, bet you've never seen a minister strip tease before. And she said, young man, My husband was a minister, and I've seen a striptease by a minister. And young man, I want to tell you, it's really not much. Now, as a college professor over the years, I've also learned a number of things, not the least of which is that even professors get bored, not just students, but even professors get bored. Oh, lost the nose. Uh-oh. Let's put that back on. Even professors get bored. Students come thinking that what they're here to do is they're here to simply get all that information that's shoved down the professor's throat, down their throats from the professor, so that they can simply regurgitate it later on a test. And so they sit there writing like this. So one day I thought, I need to go in and say something just so dumb, so outrageous, that someone will stand up and argue with me. And so this one day I walked into class, and they're sitting there taking notes, and I dropped my voice down and said, "Class, you have to have a philosophy of life. You have to have a philosophy of life." Nobody even looked up. I want to tell you, you really don't have to get one because you already have one. We show what we think inside by what we do outside. And I've learned about the world, but especially about America the last several years, that we have developed a basic American philosophy of life. It's called red-faced belligerence. You run into that, haven't you? Red-faced belligerence. People who made up their minds about everything by the time they were 10 years old. Don't you tell me. Don't you disagree with me. I don't want to hear that. So sometimes we just clam up and walk away. These days, there's very little real communication that takes place, except perhaps on bumper stickers. Most of the time, we stomp our feet and we puff up and we say, "No, it's going to be my way." If you don't believe me, just turn on the news. And in a half an hour news program, watch and count the number of times that you see red-faced belligerents walking the streets of America. And guess what? You're really not going to believe this, but every now and then, red-faced belligerence actually gets in the church. I know you don't believe that, but sometimes it actually makes its way into the church. You don't believe it, do you? Well, it does. And in the house of the Prince of Peace, people in the name of God are mad as the devil and use their religion to club and beat others with their opinions. And do so in the name of someone who would die rather than coerce anyone. I know you've heard the apocryphal story. I'll tell it with a slightly different ending. It happened in a church. And one elder stood up and said, "You know, we need a new chandelier." Another elder stood up and said, "No, we don't. We don't need a new chandelier. We didn't have a chandelier when my granddaddy was an elder. We didn't have a chandelier when my daddy was an elder. And as long as I'm an elder, we'll never have a chandelier. Besides that, if we got one, nobody here knows how to play it. What we really need is a new light fixture." That's red-faced belligerence. And that kind of thinking is frightening, especially when it's so prevalent that we look for others or for anything simply to be against it, so that we don't have to deal with what's going on inside. And now for a little magic. I'm going to grow a beard. You know, beards sometimes upset folks. There are more and more people growing beards these days, but they tend to sometimes upset people. You know, I can't believe all these beards. All these people growing beards. Bet you've never seen one grow this fast. And so now, I have a beard. And that makes me different. You know, I've run into people that since the last time I saw them, they'd grown a beard, and something about them had changed just other than that. So, hey, man, I've got a beard. It gives me insight far beyond my years. I know so much more. It puts me in the forefront of the new revolution. No, it just means you quit shaving. We think that we're revolutionary. But we really don't. We really don't live in a time of real revolution. I know we see all these things on the news, but it's not really a time of true revolution. We've taken every lie that the world has told us. We've put it together and we've said, that's revolution. But it's not. It's just conformity. It's the same old garbage. There's nothing new about anger. There's nothing new and revolutionary about hatred. War, fornication, adultery, it's the same old garbage no matter how you stack it up. Conformity to the world and the things of the world. If you really want to be a revolutionary, love your enemies. Ain't nobody doing that these days. And that's as revolutionary today as it was 2,000 years ago when Jesus first spoke it. You'll find people out there, and not just those that claim to be atheists, but others, who say that Christianity has failed. Failed miserably. But I'm going to tell you, Christianity hasn't failed. It's just rarely, really, ever been tried. And if you want to try it, you need to begin by loving your enemies. Oh, but wait, you don't understand. After what they did, after what she said, you really don't expect me to let go, do you? That loving your enemy stuff, it's just not practical. It's good religion, but it's not practical because this is a dog-eat-dog world. And you've got to give it to them before they do it to you. Well, look at the practical world we have by ignoring that impractical advice from Jesus. And that practical advice is really to get all you can to get ahead, is it not? At the expense of somebody else. That's what we've been teaching young people in America ever since I was a kid. Every billboard, every ad in a magazine, on TV, basically says the same thing. If you really want to make something of yourself and have something in this world, you got to hold this special thing. You got to drive this kind of car. You got to wear these kind of clothes. We say loud and clear in America that the real world and worth is found in the things that you possess. And people want things so much that they decide they're going to have them no matter what. And somebody gets robbed, somebody gets mugged, people get ripped off. So I can have what I want and feel that I'm now somebody. And I don't think there'll be an end to any of that kind of violence until we say loud and clear that it's not what's in your pocketbook, but what's in your character that is the real measure of your worth as a human being. Jesus said you can have the whole world and no soul, and you'll have about as much worth as a zero in this world. Next, if you want to be a true revolutionary, you need to grow your eyebrows out. You can't be a true revolutionary with thin eyebrows. The bigger and bushier, the better. In fact, the best cure for baldness that I've ever read about is grow out your eyebrows and then comb them straight back. Now, when I came in here this morning, I was just a nice, white, middle-class Baptist minister. But I wanted to fit into the crowd. I wanted you to like me. You had a big, long, pointy nose. So I got a big, long, pointy nose. And now I know you like me because I've got a big, pointy nose. And you have a big nose too. And I did other things to change because that would make me a wonderful person. I put white around my eyes and mouth because you have white around your eyes and mouth. And then I copped an attitude of red-faced belligerence. And don't you disagree. And then I grew a beard. And I grew out my eyebrows. And became a real revolutionary. And by that process, the nice middle-class Baptist minister became a bum. A bum. Years ago, Jack Hineson and his son wrote a song. And when the bum would appear, the son would sing the song to the bum. I'm not going to sing it because Jack never sang it. He said that was his son's thing to do. But when the bum appeared, here are the lyrics that he would sing to the bum. Nose putty person with clown white eyes, grease paint puppet living on lies. Who are you, mister? What's your thing? You think your makeup proves you a king? You say war is healthy. You say black is white. You just hide in your whiskers and claim you're right. You see no one clearly. The world is all a zoo. And they say step on Jesus because they say he's a Jew. Give no cup of water. Hold nobody's hand. Just play in your playpen. Now ain't life just grand? If God said something, you'd swear it's the wind. For if you should listen, your clowning would end. Out in God's real world, there are crosses to try. And someone in makeup withers and dies. But when it's all over, just think what you'll be. A grease-painted tramp clown. With no real right to be. Why did Jack really do this all those years? I'll tell you what he said as part of his clown message. But I will tell you that it's where it hits me hard. There's also another makeup I can get into as easily as this, maybe even more so. At least the nose stays on. People have all kinds of ideas about what the preacher ought to do and what the preacher ought to say. And I so desperately want to be loved that if I'm not really careful, I can get very busy doing what you want so you'll love me. And saying what you want me to say so you'll love me. And I just might not stop and say, Lord, what is it that you want me to do? What is it that you want me to say? And if I'm not careful, I run the risk of becoming just as fake as anybody. But like Jack, I found a way to get back into true reality. And that's when I just let Jesus take hold of my lapels and say to me, now it doesn't matter what they say, the only thing that matters is what you say true. It's not the color of your skin, but the fact that God loves you that makes you a person of worth. Red-faced belligerence only leads to crucifixion, and in that there is no resurrection. And then Jesus says, if you want to be a real revolutionary, come along with me. And we'll turn this old world right side up. And it's there where I can possibly find the courage to let Jesus show me the real me that I often keep hidden because I'm afraid no one will like me. So I make the talk to suggest to people everywhere that if you find you're having trouble with your makeup, maybe the answer is for you to simply let Jesus tell you about you. And tell you about the you that God wants you to be. And I'll bet that that person Jesus can turn you into can be the you that even you can love. So, my challenge, our challenge, is to regularly let God strip away all the sham, all the makeup, all the pretense until the glorious person God made you to be can truly appear. So that He's not saying, woe to you, for you're like whitewashed tombs. Woe to you pretenders, for you clean the cup on the outside but not on the inside. But rather, when you can become the glorious person God made you to truly be, then you'll know what Jesus meant when He said, I have come to give you life. And so as we stand and sing, our closing hymn is 488. As we're invited, whether we come down front or whether we do so in our hearts, the altar of our hearts, as we're invited to look beneath the makeup and come to Jesus just as I am. As we stand and as we sing, number 488, just as I am.